women get a little concerned that they're going to get big and bulky. The human body doesn't have the hormones to get big and bulky naturally. So you're literally burning calories for 2 days after a 10-minute workout.
You're listening to the High Performance Health Podcast, helping you optimize your health, performance, and longevity. My name is Angela Foster, and I'm a former corporate lawyer turned high performance health coach. Each week, I bring you cutting-edge biohacks, inspiring insights, and high-performance habits to unlock optimal health, performance, and longevity. So excited that you've chosen to join me today. Now let's dive in. Hi friends, have you ever felt confused about the type of exercise you should be doing to look and feel your best? Whether you should be lifting weights more or focusing more on cardio for fat loss, how your hormones affect where you should put your focus, or even just how to get results in the minimum time possible. And I think with most things, simplification is best. I love Tim Ferriss's question of what would it look like if it were easy? And in today's podcast, we apply that question to fitness. When I recorded this episode, the question in my mind was, what would it take to look good, feel great, and protect our longevity as women in the simplest and most time-efficient way possible? And my guest on today's show answers that very question. Vince Sant is the creator of the popular Fat Loss Extreme Fitness program and co-founder of VShred, one of the fastest-growing online fitness brands in the world. His mission is to revolutionize women's fitness by providing everyday women with the right tools, weight loss strategies, and programs that help them achieve their goals. Vince recognizes the unique struggles women over 35 face as they get older, including an aging metabolism, hormones, and societal pressures around body image. And Vince has dedicated his career to helping women reclaim their health and confidence at any age. With over 3.1 million people who've now chosen the Fat Loss Extreme program, and VShred continues to serve millions of women with easy-to-follow exercise programs and science-based eating strategies that can completely transform a woman's body in a few short months. VShred's website garners 16 million monthly hits, a 1.5 million strong email community, and a vast social media influence of over 10 million. Vince's vision extends beyond fitness. It's a movement towards empowering women to embrace their bodies, helping them understand their unique health needs at every stage of life, and teaching them how to achieve optimal health to live their best life. So without further delay, let's dive in. So, Vince, I am thrilled to have you here today with me. We were just talking offline about us both being gym lovers. I know not everyone is, but for everyone listening, you're definitely going to learn a lot about how to optimize your metabolic health and how to really get in ideal shape. And it's a great time that we're recording this together in March with spring, summer on its way. Firstly, a very warm welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here. I think so many people, right, struggle to get the results that they're looking for. And if they do get the results, they struggle then to hold on to those results. So I'd like to talk to you about both those things today, especially with summer coming. Yeah. But let's kick off with, what do you think is the main obstacle to people who are thinking about getting in shape? And maybe they feel like they've got to a certain level, but now they're at that point where it's what I think you call body recomposition, where they're looking to gain some muscle and lose some body fat. And it's that last sort of 7 or so pounds that's quite stubborn, and they can't seem to get the results that they want. What is usually standing in their way?
That's a great question. And I think, honestly, that's the million-dollar question, because everybody thinks they know what they should do when they want to get in shape. What is the first thing people do when they want to get in shape? Well, they lower their calories, they start cutting food out, they start skipping meals, and they start moving more, whether that be at home workouts, just walking around the neighborhood, going to the gym and trying to work out, doing classes, whatever it may be. So the formula is eat less, move more, right? But if it were that simple, then everybody would be walking around in great shape, but we're not. And so, like, it's funny, I see comments all the time where I'm giving fitness advice online on social media, and people are like, it doesn't have to be this complicated. Just work out more and eat less. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. But if it were that simple, then we wouldn't be in this situation where the majority of the population is obese. And so I think the biggest obstacle is, I think there's multiple, honestly, I think comparison is a big issue. I think people are focused so heavily on other people's success, or they see other people in great shape, or they see other people getting great results, and then they don't see those great results in the beginning which causes them to lose motivation, lose confidence in their plan, and ultimately give up. But I also think one of the biggest issues is not taking a, and this is probably the answer to your question, is not taking a catered approach. I think too many people are going a one-size-fits-all approach with their diet, with their workouts, or they're going about it just in the wrong way. And then what they're finding is that, this workout routine that worked for my friend Janet isn't working for me. And then they start blaming themselves. They start blaming their age. They start blaming their genetics. They start blaming their hormones. They start blaming all these different things that may contribute to making it difficult to get in shape, but is not the deciding factor, right? Everybody can get in shape. And so I think once people start understanding that they do need to take an approach that's right for their specific goals, their specific body, their specific lifestyle, once they do that, now all of a sudden it becomes a sustainable thing rather than something that they're just going to do everything they can to stick to for 2 to 3 weeks and then fall off the wagon because it's not realistic for them, right?
And when we talk about, you and I were talking a little bit offline around body types, can you explain what those body types are? Because I think that's the thing, is people do compare a lot, right? And compare themselves against another person who maybe has a completely different body type. Can you explain about the body types and also what people's expectations, what's reasonable in terms of expectations?
Yeah, would love to. And this is kind of how we've, it's kind of how we've built our business, right? And people, so body types, for anybody who's listening, body types, there's three main body types. And generally, you're going to primarily fall into one of the three. There can definitely be hybrids, but you go, we'll start at the on the skinny side, which is your hard gainer. That would be called your ectomorph. And that's somebody who has probably been skinny most of their life. They actually struggle with putting on muscle. They don't really worry about putting on fat. They generally have a very fast metabolism. And so their goal is typically to build. Right. So that's the ectomorph. On the opposite end of the spectrum, you have the endomorph. And the endomorph is someone who has probably been more heavy set all of their life. And then, or maybe they've kind of become more of a endomorph, quote unquote, later on into their life as their metabolism has slowed down, their life has slowed down, their stress has increased. And they find that they have a slower metabolism and they're generally looking to lose a lot of weight or lose a lot of fat. And so they're trying to get skinnier, right? And then in the middle of those two, you have your mesomorph. And your mesomorph is typically what you could consider somebody with great genetics, you know, somebody who is like probably more a little bit of an athlete, somebody who might have a little too much fat on their body if they let themselves go a little bit. But if they want to, they can get in shape pretty good. They can build muscle rather easily. They can burn fat rather easily. And so the people that you see that are like genetic specimen, those are typically going to classify, if you're picking a body type, under the mesomorph body type. And so figuring out which one of those you are, it's not that like this is like people talk badly about using the body type approach. But all it is a way for you to connect with a specific training style and specific dieting style for whatever your specific goals are. Because let me tell you, if your goals are to gain 10, 15 pounds because you're skinny and you want to put on size, your approach is going to be much different than somebody who wants to lose, let's say, 100 pounds. And then the same thing with somebody who's kind of in the middle. Let's say somebody's in the middle and they're like that skinny fat physique, right? They don't really have much muscle on them. They're skinny, but they got all this fat in like their midsection. We see that a lot with our clients. They're going to need a different approach than somebody who, again, wants to lose 50 pounds, because that person who wants to lose 50 pounds needs to be on a strict caloric deficit. They need to be moving a lot. They probably do want to incorporate a little bit more cardio than the person who just is skinny fat and probably wants to focus on resistance training more, probably a little bit of cardio in there, throw some HIIT workouts in, but not as much as the person who wants to lose 50 to 100 pounds. And the diet's going to be a little different as well. Do you want to be in a little bit of a deficit? Do you want to stay in a maintenance and just change that body composition? Whereas the person who wants to lose a bunch of weight, they're 100% going to be in a deficit because they're trying to get off as much fat as possible. And so once you start classifying yourself as one of those, I think it just makes it more simple for people to understand what they should be doing. Because like we just said, one of the biggest mistakes that you can make is following a plan that's not right for you. I don't know how many times I've heard like my mom following a plan that wasn't necessarily right for her goals, definitely wasn't right for her lifestyle and her preferences. And what happened? She didn't stick to it. And so I've heard that from hundreds of our female clients and our male clients. And once you start, again, associating yourself with where you actually are and what you're, it really comes down to where are you right now and what are your goals, and figuring out the fastest way from that point A to that point B. And I think your other question was like, what's a realistic, what are some expectations you can have as far as results? I actually don't like people being super goal oriented in the beginning. And I know that's probably weird for a lot of people to hear. Now, don't get me wrong. I think it's super important to have goals. It's hugely important to have goals. You should have this big lofty goal. It should scare you a little bit. You should have it on sticky notes on your mirror, on your nightstand, in your car, and you should look at it multiple times a day. But you also don't want to get so fixated on that end goal that you get upset along the way that you're not progressing fast enough. Because I think that's one of the biggest killers in people's fitness routines is expectation of results, is expecting to lose. If someone wants to lose 50 pounds in 5 months, what's your brain naturally going to say to do? It's going to say lose 10 pounds a month for 5 months. And then if you only lose 6 pounds the first month, you're mad because you didn't lose 10 pounds versus being over the moon thrilled that you lost 6 pounds by doing all these things that you're supposed to do that are eventually going to lead you to losing that 50 pounds. And so once you start focusing on the things that you're actually supposed to do day in and day out, rather than focusing on the goal, like I said, it's important to have that goal in mind, but focusing on the things that you're supposed to do day in and day out, if you start building those healthy habits, now all of a sudden it becomes a matter of when you lose that 50 pounds versus if you lose that 50 pounds.
So that's very similar to business as well, right? Have these big lofty goals, but focus on the process, not the outcome, because it's the process you control.
100%.
Okay. So just to clarify these body types, right? When people are listening, and I'm sure you have a questionnaire that people can do to figure it out. But if you've got somebody who's listening to this and they don't look like they have put on quite a bit of weight now, but originally when they were in school and college, they were always competing as an athlete. They were doing really well. They were very sporty. They looked good like you were describing, but now they're overweight. Then they're still going to identify as that mesomorph, but it's just a mesomorph who became a little bit less metabolically healthy, right, over time.
Yeah. And that's why I said you're going to be primarily one of those three body types, right? There can be a hybrid. And so like, for me, for example, growing up, I was always the skinniest guy of all my friends. I had to quit football because I was just getting hurt. I was literally, when I turned 16, I was 120 pounds. I was tiny. And then when I wrestled freshman year of high school, I wrestled like 88 pounds or something like that. It was crazy how small I was. And so now I can put on size at 30 years old a lot easier than I could at 18 years old, right? And so I would probably consider myself now more of a ectomeso, right? Because I'm still a hard gainer. If I stop working out and I stop eating as much food as I have to eat to keep my size on, I'll generally get smaller, right? Versus somebody like who you're talking about, who was probably in pretty good shape most of their childhood. They were athletes growing up, and then later on in life, what happened? Well, life took over, right? Your stress is built up. You're not as active anymore. You used to play sports all the time. I'm going to guess those people that were athletes in high school don't really play sports like they used to. They're not moving around as much. They're not walking through the halls like they did at school. And so it's not that the body type is necessarily changing. It's your activity that has changed. It's your stress that has changed. It's your lifestyle that has changed. And so that's why people don't like the whole body type thing, because it's like, oh, well, your body type can't change. Well, it's not necessarily that your body type is changing. It's just that what you need to do changes based on where you are, and where you are now would classify more as an endomorph because your metabolism has slowed down a little bit. You've packed on a little bit of fat. You have more stresses. You're not as active. Your hormones are probably all out of whack. And so, yeah, you want to go at it a little bit differently than somebody who's in okay shape right now, and they just need to get in the gym once or twice more a week, and they need to eat a little bit healthier. And so for that athlete who grew up, because I know a lot of people like that as well. I mean, that's honestly, that's most athletes, right? If you grow up an athlete, most people who don't stick to a fitness regimen later on in life, they're going to put on weight. I mean, look at professional sports players, right? Professional NBA players, professional NFL players who are in phenomenal shape. You go and look at them now and they've ballooned up. Why is that? Well, it's not because their body type changed. It's because they're no longer working out 4 hours a day, right? They don't have all this caloric expenditure going on every single day. So they're sedentary now, and they need a different approach when their life is sedentary versus when they're working out 4 hours a day for their job. And so maybe that answers your question. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, I think it's definitely something like, as a mom of three kids, you know, as my kids are going through like teenagers, I've encouraged them to find something they love that's individual as well as all their team sport, right? Because I think that so commonly happens is that as an adult, now suddenly you're in the world of work and the team sport's gone and you don't have anything because you weren't used to going to the gym or swimming or running on your own. And so I think always having, if you can, like that personal habit, because that's the one that's going to stay with you, right? Not many people are playing basketball or netball or football, or, you know, right? There are some people, but generally they're meeting up as adults once a week. It's never got the same intensity, and it isn't going to give you that body composition.
It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for the last 3 years, both my husband and I have been drinking AG1. And it's the reason I'm delighted to have them as a sponsor supporting the show. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. At 52 iterations of their formula and counting, their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and aim to find the best quality ingredients available. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At every step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust AG1 in every scoop because it's tested for 950 contaminants and banned substances, while the industry standard typically only tests for 10. Taking care of our health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by replacing multiple health supplements like multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and more in just one simple scoop. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop includes rhodiola and B vitamins for energy support and folate, magnesium, and ashwagandha for stress support, so often needed for career women and mothers like me who are juggling the multiple challenges of daily life. I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product that I genuinely look forward to drinking it every day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/Angela Foster. That's drinkag1.com/Angela Foster.
So when we look at women, for example, and they want to get in shape, can you clarify, because I've had a few people on the show and I think I still get questions coming from my audience that find it confusing. A lot of time as women, particularly as we approach perimenopause and beyond, the content on social media is all around, you've got to lift heavy, which I totally get because there are women who are used to lifting, you know, 2, 3, 4 pound dumbbells, and that's not really going to provide any body composition changes really. Particularly as estrogen's sort of starting to drop. But when we look at those repetition ranges, definitely something I found myself is that if I focus on that sort of 5x5 lifting, I will build strength, but that comes at a cost to body composition. And when I go still heavy, but higher volume, when I go into those more like 8 to 10, 12 reps, I see much better definition and physique and results. Please, yes. Can you help clarify and clear this up for people listening?
Yeah, I would love to. And I think that what it ultimately comes down to is a term called hypertrophy, right? And for anybody listening, hypertrophy is essentially a scientific term for building muscle, right? And how muscle is built is generally going to be in that higher rep range, right? Because they're like, if you look at a Olympic level power lifter, right? Their training sessions are going to be lots of sets of very, very low reps. And obviously they have deload weeks where they have higher reps, and then they're going to have these like 5 to 10 minute rests between their three rep set, because that three rep set is going to be using 90% of their one rep max. And therefore they're going to be really utilizing their central nervous system to lift that weight. And that's how you get stronger, right? So that lower rep range is going to help you build strength. It's going to help you get stronger. And I think there's definitely a place for that in pretty much everybody's routine, because you obviously want to be stronger. You feel better when you're stronger. You're at less risk of injury. If you're stronger, you can lift your kids, play with your kids, bring the more groceries in. You can do all these things if you're stronger, right? But at the same time, people also want to do this to look better. And it's not just about looking better. It's about confidence. It's about feeling good, right? It's about walking about like you're a different person and glowing different because you feel good about who you are, right? And generally, you feel better about who you are when you're in better shape. And that comes from that body composition shift. And generally, like for me, for example, and honestly, it's not even about me. This is just in people in general. When you lift in a higher rep range, you're going to recruit more muscle fibers, and you're going to create more micro trauma on those muscle fibers, which is going to result in muscle building. And I know a lot of times, I don't mean to single out women here, but a lot of time, but guys don't deal with this. Women get a little concerned that they're going to build too much muscle. They get concerned that they're going to get big and bulky if they start using weights heavier than what you were saying, those 2 to 5 pound dumbbells in their arms. They're doing curls with 5 pound dumbbells. That's not going to do anything for your body. That's not going to do anything for changing your body composition, right? Because what you have to understand is that when you put muscle on your body, first off, the human body doesn't have the hormones to get big and bulky naturally, right? And so if someone out there is scared of pushing themselves with resistance training in the gym, don't be. You will not be getting big and bulky. I've been trying to get big and bulky for 15 years, and I got 10 times more testosterone than any woman listening to this. And so you're not going to get big and bulky. But once you start pushing yourself a little bit and you start actually challenging your muscles and you get into that, let's say 8 to 15 rep range, that's generally where I would probably stay if you're trying to change that body composition. And generally I would go, as far as like in total workout, I would recommend probably 2 to 3 exercises per muscle group. And then sticking to 3 or 4 sets per exercise, and then staying in that 8 to 15 rep range. Generally, I'd say you could stay in the 12 to 15 rep range, but it's about challenging yourself in that selected rep range. And so like if you're going with let's say you are going with your 5x5, I think that's Russian volume training, if I'm not mistaken. Let's say you're doing that, you're challenging yourself with those 5 rep ranges. And so you should be struggling by that 5th rep, right? You might be struggling by the 4th rep. Same thing with when you're doing 12 reps. You shouldn't just rock out 12 reps of lat rows, right? Cable lat rows. You shouldn't just do 12 and then let it down because you counted 12. You should let it down because you couldn't do another one. And I think that's the intensity that a lot of people's training is missing, is they're not pushing themselves because they're scared they're going to build too much muscle. When in reality, what's going to happen is that lean muscle that you will build is going to speed up your metabolism. It's going to help your hormones. It's going to help you burn more calories at rest, which we burn 80% of our calories at rest anyways, more than 80% of our calories at rest. And so you're going to burn more calories. You're going to burn more fat because of this lean muscle that you put on your body. And what most people don't realize is that muscle is way more dense than fat, right? If you had a pound of muscle sitting on the table and then a pound of fat sitting on the table, the fat would look like 5 times bigger than that pound of muscle. And so if you are putting on a pound of muscle, but you're burning a pound of fat, it'll essentially look like you burned 4 pounds of fat, right? Size wise. And so if you, and all that fat is being burnt from your basal metabolic rate, your total daily energy expenditure increasing because of the muscle that you put on your body. And so if anybody out there is going to the gym and you're struggling with what to do, I would say a great general recommendation is to find 2 to 3 exercises per muscle group. So if you're going to be going and doing upper body, so you want to do 2 exercises for back, 2 for shoulders. And then if I don't, some women don't hit chest, but if you want to do chest, 2 for chest, and then, or maybe 2 for arms. If you don't want to do chest, and then do 3 sets of each of those exercises, keep your rests short, and push yourself with the weight. Don't put 20 pounds on the lat row because you're scared you're going to put on muscle. Challenge yourself. See, do your first set a little bit lighter. I always do that to see how I'm feeling, get the blood flowing, right? And then I'll increase weight a little bit and I'll see how that set goes. And then if I'm feeling strong that day, because you also want to listen to your body. If I'm feeling strong that day, I'll bump that weight up a little bit more. If I got 13 reps when I was going for 12, I'm bumping that weight up quite a bit more because that next set I want to get 10 reps. And so it's about figuring out like where you're at that day, because I think that's part of it. You don't have to break PRs every single day. You don't have to progress. I say this all the time. Progress is not linear. You're not going to get better every single day. There's going to be days where you struggle. There's going to be days where you feel like crap. There's going to be days when you don't want to work out. And that's okay. That's life. But it's about making sure that you're pushing yourself on all days, because that's where the discipline comes in. Because the days that you're not motivated, it's even more important to work out. It's easy to work out when you're feeling like you're ready to go work out, when you're excited about working out. It's easy to work out then. It's not as easy to work out when you don't feel like going to the gym, right?
Yeah, for sure. And also I think it's easier to work out when you're in the habit of working out, like when you crave what you repeatedly do. And when you fall outside of it, it becomes harder. So what about fasted training? What are your thoughts around that? Do you think people should pre-fuel? I mean, I'm a big believer that you need to do it when you can fit it in. So for me, it is early in the morning. It's around 5:30, just because I've got 3 kids and I'm busy with my business. So I can't imagine eating at that time of day. So I go and train fasted. I do sometimes think, and I do sometimes have like essential aminos or something like that, or some sort of pre-workout fuel. But what are your thoughts around pre-fueling, post-training fueling, etc.?
There was a study done on people following different diets, right? And following different routines. And what they found was it didn't really make a difference what they did as long as they did it, which is, I think, the answer to this question. And so there's really not going like this is what my whole business has been built around. It's about figuring out what's going to be best for you, right? And so when it comes to fasted training, if you're working out at 5 p.m., do I think you should do fasted training? Probably not, because it's going to be really hard to get in all your calories if you're eating after that workout. But if you're like, for you, for example, if you're working out at 5 a.m., 5:30 a.m. in the morning, that's early. And so like generally for me, for our clients, I'll recommend if you're going to eat, you have to at least probably give your body about an hour to digest that. And so if you were to eat before your workout, you're waking up at 4:30 to eat, giving that an hour to digest and then going to the gym, that's just not realistic, right? And so if I told somebody they shouldn't work out, so if you were my client and you told me I have to work out at 5 a.m. and I go, well, I don't want you to work out fasted. And so you're like, well, then what do I do? I go, well, you wake up at 4 a.m., you eat a meal, and then you let it digest for an hour, and then you work out at 5 a.m. And you go, okay, I'll do it. And then you think to yourself, am I really going to do this, right? Is this really realistic for my life, right? Is this something that I enjoy, right? Because I think enjoyment trumps all, right? And what you actually can do, right? If you are somebody like, I know people who love working out fasted. Do I like working out fasted? Not really. I lift heavy weights. I like going midday. I like getting 2 or 3 meals in me. But if I do go work out in the morning, first thing, I am probably going to do it fasted, because you do sometimes feel a little bit more mentally clear, right? You do feel good sometimes if you're not like absolutely starving. And sometimes you are just absolutely starving and there's no way around that. But I mean, what I think ultimately comes down to is what do you enjoy most and what works best for your lifestyle, for you as a parent of three with a company to run, podcast interviews to do all the time. It doesn't make sense for you to stress yourself over eating before a super early workout. And so I could give somebody, I always say this, I could give somebody the most optimal plan for them specifically to get in the best shape as fast as possible. If they can't stick to it, there's no point. You might as well just rip that up and throw it in the trash. And so I would rather work with somebody to figure out what's best for their lifestyle and what's best for their routine, what's best for their calendar, right? Because we're all busy. We all got a bunch of things going on. And so figuring out how this new active health and wellness lifestyle fits into your already busy routine, that's how you stick to it long term. So my answer, that's my long answer to your question. My short answer to your question is, if you enjoy doing that and that's what works best for your routine, then you should do that.
And would you recommend in that situation, because I know a lot of people I speak to do work out early and they do it fasted, would you recommend having something like essential aminos? Are there any like caffeine-based supplements, anything that you would recommend that you think would improve the quality of the workout or the results?
Yeah, I think what those two that you just said are great. I think BCAAs are a phenomenal option. Obviously, those are the
Some people I've heard being really against them, saying, oh, no, you shouldn't have BCAAs. You should have essential aminos, and BCAAs spike insulin. And
well, BCAAs are essential, do have your essential amino acids in them. I think what people mostly have against BCAAs is that you don't need them if you're eating enough protein, right? And so if there's amino acids in all proteins, right? That's a closed chain, right? But if you're not getting that protein in before your workout and you do need that energy, that is going to provide your body with that energy to get a better workout in. And then same thing with caffeine. Caffeine has so many studies about obviously giving you way more energy, but also with mental clarity. And so like those are two huge things when it comes to getting in shape. And then the other one that I would throw in there is salt. I'm a big proponent of salt first thing in the morning, because we lose a lot of our electrolytes when we're sleeping. And you're going to lose even more when you're working out. And so the first thing I do in the morning is I have a greens drink, and I put about 500 to 600 milligrams of sodium in there, salt. It's pink Himalayan salt that I put in there with that greens, and I drink that first thing. And so salt is going to be phenomenal for your workout. It's going to help you avoid cramps. It's going to give you all the electrolytes you could ever want. And then if you can find a salt that has also, like, I'm sure you've heard of those like element packets or the liquid IVs. They have sodium, but they also have potassium, and everybody knows potassium is awesome. And then they have magnesium. And so you have a couple different minerals that are just going to elevate your workout even more. And so, yeah, I mean, if my mom were asking me if she can work out fasted, I would be like, well, first off, do you enjoy it? And if she goes, yeah, then I'd go, okay, yes, we're going to do that. And then she's like, how do I make the most of it? I would say, we're going to play with some supplements. I don't think that there's a one size fits all with supplements either. I think it comes down to, some people like taking pre-workout. Some people don't. Some people love the scratchy skin feeling that you get. Some people hate that. And so it really comes down to just testing different things and seeing what's going to help you get the best workout. Because honestly, placebo is like one of the best things that you can use to your advantage. And so like, if you drink a pre-workout and in your brain, you convince yourself that's going to help you get a much better workout, then it's going to help you get a better workout. So if you find a routine that works for you,
here's what I've noticed. Yeah. Here's what I've noticed by having a particular pre-workout. Often what I find is I get a better workout, and I'm not even convinced it's down to that anymore, but it's because my brain's gone, hey, I get that caffeine kick, right? And then I'm in the gym and it's like, oh, we're here to work out. It's almost like that routine, right? It's the same thing if you want to do deep work, isn't it? If you have the same space set up and you approach it in the same way.
That's why they say don't put your office in your bedroom, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So true. That's a great point. Okay, let's talk about cardio. And how much people should be doing, need to be doing, what type of cardio, and whether that can limit results. What would Let's have a, what would a typical work week look like if you want to have great body composition, like you were talking about, and have that confidence to walk around feeling great?
Yeah, it's a good question, because obviously cardio is probably the most common exercise selection when it comes to somebody wanting to get in shape. Because like if I'm going to use Janet again as an example, because I can't think of another name for some reason. Janet in Kansas wants to get in shape. What's the first thing she's going to do if she goes to the gym? Well, if she goes to the gym, she's probably going to get on that treadmill, right? Or she's going to ride the bike, or she's going to get on the elliptical if she wants something low impact, right? And cardio, there's multiple forms of cardio, and people should understand that, because I think most people think that they're trapped into this box of doing this one type of cardio that most people don't like doing, right? Now, do you have to do this type of cardio? No. Can you do this cardio? Is this cardio beneficial? 100%. All types of cardio are beneficial, right? All cardio is going to burn calories. And the more calories you can burn every single day, the more of a deficit you're going to be in, or the more likely you're going to be in a deficit, and the more you're going to be able to lose weight, right? But there's different forms of cardio. And I think that's something that people kind of overlook, or they're just not super informed on, is what those forms of cardio are. Because you have your regular steady state cardio, which is typically what you see people doing at the gym, jogging on the treadmill, riding the bike, doing the elliptical, heart rate's kind of elevated. And then you have something that's on the lower end of the spectrum of cardio, which is low intensity steady state cardio. And this is something that's going to be, like the name implies, which is low intensity. So this is something like walking on an incline, or even riding a bike, but slower, or doing the elliptical, but slower, right? And so that's keeping your heart rate much, much lower. And that's great for you as well. It's going to take some extra time to burn the same number of calories, but you're burning pretty much purely fat when you do low intensity steady state cardio. There's a difference of carb expenditure versus fat expenditure depending on what zone of heart rate you're in. There's 5 zones of heart rate, and that's a conversation for another time. But there's low intensity steady state cardio, there's regular steady state cardio, and then I would say the one that I generally recommend to most people, because it's the most time efficient and the least boring, is HIIT workouts. And I think that HIIT workouts have gained more popularity in recent years. But before a couple years ago, nobody was talking about HIIT workouts. I didn't see anybody doing HIIT workouts. I didn't see anybody prescribing HIIT workouts. I would like to say that my company was one of the innovators of it, but we weren't. We just have been recommending this. And I feel like they've just, I think with the wave of fitness on social media, I think it's just gotten more popular to do HIIT workouts and make HIIT workout videos and stuff like that. But HIIT workouts are essentially, you're taking your cardio workout from 30, 45 minutes down to 10, 15 minutes, burning the same number of calories and utilizing this thing called excess post-oxygen consumption, which is basically where you burn calories up to 48 hours after your workout is over. So you're literally burning calories for 2 days after a 10-minute workout. And so not only are you burning all these calories, but it's also, like I just said, it took 10 minutes. And so for all those people who say they don't have time to work out, they got too much stuff going on, you got 10 minutes, because we got entire programs built around HIIT workouts. And so is doing only HIIT workouts the most optimal way to get in shape? No. But is doing 3-4 HIIT workouts for 10 minutes a day, 3-4 workouts a week for 10 minutes a day, is that going to be much better than being sedentary and doing nothing? You bet your life it is. And so we have entire programs built around that for people who just want to get good results without having to give up their life or live in the gym or whatever. And so I think for most, it's tough to prescribe, like, you should do this much cardio every single week, because again, I'm going to keep coming back to this. It comes down to what you like doing and what your schedule allows. And so if I tell you that to get the best possible results, you need to do 30 minutes of steady state cardio 6 days a week, because like, if you get like on a body in like a bodybuilding prep, those coaches are having those bodybuilders do cardio like 5, 6, maybe even 7 days a week, like for 30 to 45 minutes a day, which is crazy. But they do it to get optimal results. So if I tell somebody that they need to do that to get optimal results, Are they going to do it? Because if not, then I would never write that for them. I would never have them do that. I would go, okay, what do you like doing? Right? Do you like running? Do you like biking? Do you hate doing all of that? And so we're just going to try to get in and get out as fast as we possibly can. Okay. Once we figure that out, it's like, okay, what days are you the most free? What days do you think you, let's say we landed on HIIT workouts. Okay. What days and at what time do you have a spare, let's call it 30 minutes, 10 minutes to work out, and then 20 minutes to recover and get back to whatever it is that you were doing, or maybe take a quick shower or whatever. What days do you have available for that? I'm like, oh, well, I can do that on Monday, Tuesday. I can do that pretty much Monday through Friday. I go, okay, we don't even have to do that every Monday through Friday. We're just going to do that Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And so you do that for 10 minutes, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I think generally, I mean, if I was going to generalize this, I would say 3 to 4, I'd say 3 cardio workouts a week is a good general approach to it. But again, it's about finding what works best for you. Well, it could be low intensity as well. It could be steady state as well. Like we were talking before we started doing this about my recent triathlon training, right? And I've been actually getting a lot of negative feedback. I don't want to say negative feedback, but people commenting being like, aren't you the guy that promotes no cardio and you're doing cardio all the time? And I'm like, yeah, I am. And yeah, I'm doing that because I want to do that because I'm enjoying doing that. I'm not doing this for body composition. I'm not doing this for getting in shape. I'm doing this to complete a race. That's literally it. And if it weren't for that, I wouldn't be doing this because for the last 10 years of my life, I didn't do this. I did probably 5 to 10 cardio workouts in the last 10 years of my life and stayed sub 10% body fat all the time. And so it's like, you don't have to do that to get in shape. There are other ways, but it does have its time and place to accelerate results or increase caloric expenditure. Or if you're not going to go to the gym and you're not going to resistance train as intensely as maybe I am or somebody else is, then yeah, we got to figure out some sort of activity for you to do to get those calories burned. Right. And so, yeah, it's tough to give a general recommendation.
I'm curious where you hadn't done any of that cardio and you'd focused more on lifting and now you've moved into that triathlon training. What was your baseline fitness? Because you would have got some fitness from lifting weights, right? It's not like it's not elevating your heart rate. It is. What was your baseline fitness like when you started triathlon training?
I was in pretty terrible shape, to be honest. my lifting had consisted mostly of bodybuilding style exercises, which I do blood work every 6 months. All my markers are perfect, right? Sometimes my vitamin D is a little bit low. If I forget to take my vitamin D supplement, that's probably one that, just side note, has nothing to do with anything we're talking about. Everybody listening, go get some vitamin D. You're probably deficient and it's so important for bone health and just so many things. But, I had just body built for 10, 15 years. And I had pushed myself and I had tried different forms of lifting, but I had never really done anything endurance wise. And so if I was really being intense with my lifting, then yeah, my heart rate would get elevated after a really intense set of squats or deadlifts or something like that. A big compound movement's obviously going to raise your heart rate a lot more than some curls are. But then I got on the treadmill and I realized that I'm in really bad shape. And because I actually ran cross country in high school. I quit football. I told you I was really, really skinny. And I started cross country because I was like, well, I got to do something. I'm a competitive person. So I was like, I got to stay active. I got to play a sport. I also wanted varsity letters. And so I was like, I'm going to do cross country. And I was pretty fast. I was on varsity every single year. And so when I started running again, it was Thanksgiving last year. I was like, actually, it was Thanksgiving 2 years ago. I did a race with my mom. My mom asked me if I wanted to do a turkey trot with her. And it was for one of her friends who had terminal cancer. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And I trained a little bit for it because, like I said, I'm competitive. And man, those first couple runs, I was struggling to get like, I was dying after like 10-minute miles. And I was like, this is not where I was in high school. I was like, I was running 6:30 miles, no problem in high school. I was running sub 18 minute 5Ks in high school. I was like, I am so far off right now. This is crazy. And So I just kept doing it, you know, and I eventually got my VO2 max tested, and I actually got my cardio zones measured properly. You do like that whole mask on the treadmill, and you start at a low pace, and then you increase pace like every 2 minutes, and you go until you're essentially dead. And it was a really tough test, but you get your zones. And once I learned my zones, I learned my VO2 baseline, I guess. That's when I really started training smart, because before that, I think when most people like are trying to like get faster, they just think that they need to run fast all the time. And I actually just posted a video on my Instagram the other day that went pretty viral, where it was like how people think they're supposed to run on the treadmill. And it's like me going super fast. And then it's like how you should actually run on the treadmill. And it's me going pretty dang slow, because that slower pace is going to make your body way more efficient at utilizing oxygen. And so if you can keep your pace slow, I know it can be tough. Like for me, for example, it was really tough in the beginning, because like I was running at like 5.5 miles per hour on the treadmill. I felt slow. I felt like everybody was watching me going super slow. This big muscly guy can't run fast, but that was just me in my head. Nobody actually cares about anybody else at the gym. For anybody out there who's worried about looking silly at the gym, nobody's watching you. But we all think that, right? And so once I actually slowed my training down, and then I incorporated like one speed workout a week, that's when I really started getting faster. But yeah, it was it's definitely been a learning experience.
What does it look like now? How much volume are you doing for triathlon training? How much are you, you mentioned speed work there. Are you doing a mix of like interval training, speed training combined with longer runs and swims and stuff? Or how much cardio are you having to do?
Yeah, it depends how close to the race I am. So like right now, I don't have anything scheduled till October. And so I had one coming up in April, but I'm going to be completely honest with you. I canceled it because it's the same weekend as Stagecoach. And I really wanted to go to Stagecoach this year, and I already had a house booked. And then I realized, oh, they both fall on the exact same weekend, which was unfortunate. But yeah, so currently my next race is October as of right now. I might do something before that. I'm actually doing a marathon September and then doing a triathlon in October. So I might schedule some smaller races before then. But like I'd say my maintenance is pretty simple. I run once or twice a week. I prefer running over cycling and swimming. I'm a terrible swimmer. And then I'll swim once or twice every 2 weeks. And so like sometimes I'll swim once every other week, but I'll run usually twice a week, bike once, maybe twice a week, and then swim once every week or two. And so I should be doing it the opposite. I should be swimming more because I suck at swimming, but I don't enjoy it, you know? And so if like I'm making myself swim all the time, I'm doing something that I'm not enjoying all the time, and it's making everything not as fun. Right. I enjoy running. I enjoy going outside. And right now it's kind of, I don't want to say cold because Vegas doesn't really get super cold. And so for the people who are in cold places, they'd be like, shut up. Vegas is not cold, but kind of too cold to swim outside. Right. And so I have to swim in the indoor pool and I'm not getting sun. It's kind of weird and stinky and humid in there. And so like, I'd rather go outside and run, or I'd rather get on my, I have a nice road bike. I'd rather get on my road bike and go, or I get on the bike at the gym and I read a book, or I just run on the treadmill. And yeah, so I'd say I'm doing 3 cardio sessions a week right now. And those consist of different things depending on how much volume I've built up. I'd say my shortest run is 3 miles. And then what I'll do as I get into prep is I'll work up to like marathon training will be a little bit different. I'll get into really long runs and I'll probably, put the cycling and the swimming on the back burner for a couple of weeks while I really get good at running. And I use all my muscle on, or all my, I use my recovery time to recover from runs only. But as I ramp up into race day, yeah, those 3 mile runs will turn into 13 mile runs. But those aren't speed runs. And so those are generally going to be those zone 2 workouts that you should be able to maintain a conversation. You should be able to talk to somebody at that pace. Like that's what zone, for anybody listening, zone 2 is essentially a pace where you should be able to have a full-on conversation. And so you're jogging slowly, have a full-on conversation with somebody. That's how low your heart rate should be while you're working out to get faster, to get more efficient at your workout. And so yeah, I'll do 3 cardio workouts a week, and I'll make sometimes four, and I'll make one of those a speed workout.
Okay. And that's alongside all of your lifting.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
There's a lot of gym time logged every week.
There's a lot of gym time. Yeah. Okay. And so what about optimal, before you go, optimal lifting in terms of programming? How much do people need to be doing? I think what I found, and I've had other guests on the show talk about this, the more you get into lifting, the harder it is going to be to make a body composition change because you're really at the margins. And so that's when you need maybe more volume. Whereas for somebody who's an untrained individual, a kind of 3 times a week protocol generally works quite well. What about for people? And I know we've talked quite a bit about those protocols to the audience. So for people who are doing more lifting and they do really want to get the edge, they want to have that confidence, what would be a good kind of split protocol for them across the week? How many workouts would they need to be doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think what you said starting out was great. I think everything that you just said was absolutely perfect. In the beginning, you can get away with doing a lot less, right? Your body's not used to it. You're going to get really sore in the beginning, and you're going to be able to progress a lot faster in the beginning. You're going to see changes faster. You're going to get stronger faster. Like perfect example is like let's say I had a twin and he'd never worked out in his life and I'm in the current shape that I'm in right now and we both start lifting, I'm probably going to be lifting about the same weight in 2 to 3 months from now. He's going to be lifting way more weight than he is right now. So he's going to see way more progress in the beginning. And so, yeah, I think in the beginning, like what we generally recommend is a minimum of 3 resistance training workouts a week. And so I would say 5 workouts a week is great. That doesn't have to be all resistance training. So if somebody wants to do that, make that 3 resistance training workouts and then maybe 2 cardio sessions a week, that's great too. And that cardio could literally be taking your dog on a 40-minute walk. Like I do that probably, I do like 3 long walks with my dog every single week and then I walk my dog every single day, but like some of them are just like around the block versus a really long, like multiple mile walk. And so like, that's a very easy way for somebody to get in low intensity, steady state cardio. And so like, if you don't want to go to the gym, get outside, walk your dog, your dog's going to love it too. And so I think at the beginning, 3 resistance training sessions a week, I think that's minimum. I think everybody should aim for that. And I think in the beginning, that's going to get you great results. And then after you start getting used to that, you're no longer getting sore. You've seen some progress. You've been doing it for a month or two. Now, all of a sudden it's time to start working up in volume, like you said. And honestly, I think it's the perfect formula because it's going to be harder to stick to it in the beginning, right? You haven't built a routine. You haven't built any habits. It's new. It's confusing. It's frustrating, possibly. It's stressful, possibly, right? So in the beginning, starting with those 3 workouts a week is going to be just the perfect intro to it so that you can start building routines, so that you can start figuring out what days you're going to work out. You can start seeing results, because there's that quote that is, once you see results, it becomes an addiction. And it's so true. You and I were talking about how we love the gym. We love working out. Not everybody has that, but I think most people don't have that because they haven't seen the results. I love it because I know that if I kind of fall off the wagon a little bit, or maybe I get sick and I don't go to the gym for a week or two and I get all skinny and I get all soft, I get back in the gym, I'm a lot weaker. I'm not looking good. I'm probably wearing a hoodie. I'm probably not wearing any kind of cutoff that shows any skin because I'm a little insecure about how I'm looking that day. But I know that if I put in a week of effort or 2 weeks of effort or 3 weeks of effort, I'm going to turn this thing around quick. And I love that progress that I see. And so I think the people who are missing out on that progress are also missing out on the addiction that could happen if you do things the right way. So yeah. Back to your question, I think with resistance training, a great starting point is 3 times a week. And again, push yourself during those. And then as you progress, as you build those habits, as you start enjoying it more, amp that up to 4 times a week, then 5 times a week. I would not go more than 6 times a week. The whole no days off BS is ridiculous. You should definitely have days off. You should definitely have rest days. You have to recover. Without recovery, your workouts are completely pointless. That's why sleep is so crucial. That's why hydration is so crucial. And so making sure that you're giving yourself time to recover is going to be huge. So I'd say minimum 3 times a week, maximum 6 times a week. And I would say 5 times a week is fine too.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Where can people find out more about you and your programs and how they can personalize their program to their body type?
Yeah. So our website is vshred.com. And I mean, as soon as you pull that up, there's going to be a little banner right at the top where we have a free body type quiz that tells you it's six questions. It's a super easy quiz. They're multiple choice questions. And basically it spits out a video at the end that tells you what you should be doing in the gym and in the kitchens, depending on what your goal is, what your body type is. And then we also have all social medias, VShred on YouTube, VShred on Instagram. My personal Instagram is VIN_Sant, Vincent. But yeah, you can find us on all social medias, TikTok as well. I'm not huge on TikTok. I don't know. I feel like I'm a little too old, but I don't really understand it that well.
Even the user, yeah.
Go check us out.
Awesome. We'll do that. You've helped so many people. We will definitely link to that in the show notes, and people can go and find out how to personalize their workout. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing. I love the way you simplify it while still personalizing it. I think it's a great approach, and I can see why it's so successful.
Well, I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun talking to you about this stuff.
Amazing. Thank you.
I hope today's episode inspired you on your journey to vibrant health and high performance. Make sure you check out the show notes for a summary of all the important links to everything we talked about. And if you enjoyed this episode, hit the follow button and share it with a friend on social media or leave a review over on Apple Podcasts. Remember, achieving high performance health is about getting 1% better each day. So think about one thing you learned from today's episode and start implementing it today. Share with me what you've learned on social media over at Angela S. Foster. I love hearing from you and connecting with you. Have a beautiful day, and always remember, you are worthy of your dreams.